And as we begin our study today, remember that the children of Israel, having been led through the wilderness by Moses, entered into the promised land. And they were given the land as God had said to Abraham that He would. And so the tribes were given their territories, both on the east side, where we have Reuben and Gad, half the tribe of Manasseh, and on the west side, where we have Judah in the south, Dan and Benjamin, forming a sort of a buffer between Ephraim and Judah, and then Manasseh, Issachar, Zebulun, Asher, Naphtali. And so these were the tribes, and these were the places that they were given to live in. Now, the period of the judges lasted from about not long after 1400 until about 1040 or so. And so that means we only have about 350 years in here for the period of the judges, because the invasion is thought to have been around 1400, and Saul is began his reign in about 1040. So that only gives you around 350 years. So at the time of Joshua, when the children of Israel had completed the conquest, this was the way the land looked. This was the way the land looked. But very soon after the death of Joshua, the people began their apostasy. And very quickly the situation was that every man did that which was right in his own eyes in the land of Israel. We have a couple of stories at the end of the book of Judges, Micah and the Danites, and the Levite and his concubine. And these stories are given there really to show the spiritual condition that prevailed during the time of the judges. And in the last of those stories, the priest is named Phinehas. And Phinehas was only the grandson of Aaron. And Phinehas was active even during the wilderness wandering. And so that gives us a pretty good idea that we have around 350 years, and that early in that period already the children of Israel were forsaking the Lord. And what they would do is they would forsake the Lord, they would apostatize and seek after other gods. And then God would remove His protection from them and let them fall into the hands of enemies. And this would cause the Israelites to be in affliction. And in their affliction they would cry out, and they would say, "We need to repent. We need to come back to God." And they would go back to God. They would renew their covenant with God. And then they would call upon God for deliverance, and He would deliver them. During this time, there were judges such as Othniel, and Ehud, and Shamgar, and Deborah. And during these early days, they faced the enemies of Cush and Rishathaim and the Mesopotamians. They faced enemies such as the Moabites. They faced a great number of the Canaanites under the leadership of King Jabin. But all of these enemies were overcome by the first group of judges that God gave. But the children of Israel continued their ways and their apostasy, and they fell into the hands of the Midianites. Hordes of Midianites came sweeping over the land, taking their crops and everything. It was during this time that God raised up Gideon, and Gideon delivered the children of Israel from the oppression of the Midianites. Then follows the story of Abimelech, and then Tola and Jair and Jephthah, about which we really are told no details so far as what they did. Then there was another period of oppression that came up, and that was from the Ammonites and the Philistines. And so we have the story of Jephthah. Jephthah led the children of Israel in battle against the Ammonites and overthrew their bondage and freed the children of Israel from that oppressor. Now then, during this same time, we have a Philistine oppression that was going on. We have judges Ibzan, Elon, and Abdon, and we're not told any details about them either. And then we have the story of Samson. And the thing that is said about Samson is that during the days of Samson, the Lord began to give Israel deliverance from the Philistines. It was probably during this same period of time that we have Eli and Samuel. And they fit into this general time period of the oppression of the Philistines. In the days of Eli, the tent of meeting and the altar of sacrifice was set up at Shiloh. And so there Eli would minister before God as the high priest. And there was a man named Elkanah who came there to worship with his wives, Hannah and Peninnah. Hannah was barren. And while she was there at Shiloh, she prayed to God at the tent of meeting that God would give her a son. And a son was given. And that son's name was Samuel. Samuel means asked of God. Samuel's mother promised that she would give him to the service of God when he was old enough. And that was a sort of a bargain that she made with God, a deal that she made with God. And so, sure enough, God granted her prayer and gave her this boy child named Samuel. And as soon as Samuel was old enough, he was taken to minister there before the tabernacle. And as he served there, the conditions were not good because Eli, the priest, had sons who were very wicked. Hophni and Phinehas were very wicked. They did not respect the laws of God regarding the sacrifices. They even committed fornication with women that served there in the area of the tabernacle. So they were very wicked young men. And God told Eli, "I am going to rid you from the house of the priesthood. I am not going to let you or your sons after you be priests. I'm going to remove your family from the priesthood." And when Samuel was brought by his mother to be left there in the care of Eli to serve there and to grow up in the service of God, Samuel did that. And he was a good young man, a good boy. And one night, when he went to bed, there was a voice that he heard crying, "Samuel, Samuel." Samuel got up and he ran into where Eli was asleep. And he said, "Did you call me?" Eli said, "No, I didn't call you. Go back to bed." The boy was called again. "Samuel, Samuel." He ran in to where Eli was and Eli said, "I did not call you. Go back to sleep." Even the third time the voice called, "Samuel, Samuel." And this time when the boy went into Eli said, "This is something unusual going on. This is not just the boy having a dream." So Eli perceived that it was the voice of God calling Samuel, and he said to Samuel, "This time when the voice speaks, cry, 'Speak, Lord, thy servant heareth.'" Samuel went in and lay back down, and this time when the voice spoke, Samuel said, "Speak, Lord, thy servant heareth." And God proceeded to tell Samuel that he indeed would remove the house of Eli from the priesthood as he had already told Eli. And this came to pass shortly after that. As Samuel grew up to manhood, there was a disastrous battle between the Philistines and the Israelites. And in that disastrous battle, the Ark of the Covenant was captured by the Philistines. Hophni and Phinehas were killed in the battle. And when the news was brought to Eli about the death of his sons, about the defeat of Israel, and about the taking of the Ark of the Covenant, Eli fell over backwards and died. And the Ark of the Covenant remained in Philistine hands for a time until God exerted His power and showed the Philistines that He was the true God. He brought tremendous afflictions upon the Philistines. And the Philistines said, "We must send this ark back to Israel because we have angered the God of the Israelites." And they sent that ark back. And so the ark remained at the house of Obed-Edom in Kiriath-Jearim for 20 years. The 20 years there is probably the last 20 years of that period of Philistine oppression. And that oppression continued until Samuel was a grown man taking over the work of judge in his own right. And so Samuel was a prophet of God, and he was a judge of God. And he went out going from place to place up there in the hill country and judging Israel. And God spoke through Samuel, and He didn't let one word of Samuel fall to the ground. And when Samuel was taking over as judge in the prime of his adulthood, God gave a great victory to Israel over Philistia. And they overcame Philistia at a place which Samuel called Ebenezer. He said, he raised up a stone to mark the spot. And Ebenezer means stone of help. Here I raise my Ebenezer. So God gave Israel the victory over the Philistines. And Samuel then judged Israel for a long lifetime. But when he got to be an old man, the people came to Samuel. The Philistines were beginning their encroachments again. And the people came to Samuel and they said, "Samuel, You're getting old, and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now then, we want a king. We want a king to go in and out before us. We want a king so that we can be like the other nations around us. They have kings. We don't have a king. Give us a king so that we can be like the other nations. And when Samuel went to God about this, God said, Samuel, they have not rejected you. They have rejected me. Now then, give them the king that they ask for. But tell them what he will do and how he will treat them. They have not been used to having a king like they're going to have. So Samuel went to the people and told them how the king would tax them, and he would put burdens upon them, and he would take their children to be his servants and his soldiers. Oh, we don't care. We don't care. We want a king. So God said, very well, we will give them a king. There was a man named Saul, son of Kish of the tribe of Benjamin. And Saul, the son of Kish, was out hunting for his father's asses and did not even know what was going on in the plan of God, in the mind of God. And he came to a city where Samuel was. He came to ask where the asses were. But when he got there and met Samuel, God said to Samuel, this is the one, Samuel. This is the one that I have chosen. So before Samuel parted from Saul on that occasion, he anointed him king. Saul was a big man. He looked like a king. He was so kingly in his appearance. And all Israel gathered together at Mizpah to make Saul their king. And they couldn't even find him. He was hiding in the baggage. But they brought him out. And they anointed him publicly to be the king. And some said, is that going to be our king? And they didn't have much confidence in Saul. But not long after this, there was a threat from the Ammonites out in the desert. They came into the eastern part of the country over here, and they threatened the men of Jabesh-Gilead. And when word came to Saul, he led an army out and overcame Nahash and the Ammonites and delivered the men of Jabesh-Gilead from this threat. And now everybody was for Saul. Nobody was going to be able to stand against Saul. But unfortunately, Saul did not turn out to be the kind of man that God wanted to be king. In fact, on an occasion when the Philistines were threatening very, very strongly, Jonathan rose up and through an act of heroism led his men and destroyed the Philistine garrison. Samuel told Saul to wait for him, to wait for me to come to offer the sacrifice. But Saul did not wait until Samuel got there. He went ahead and offered the sacrifice. And when Samuel showed up, Saul said, I just had to do it. I was forced to do it. Why, the people were leaving me. I couldn't do anything else. And Samuel said, 1 Samuel 13, verses 13 and 14, that now your kingdom, Saul, is not going to continue. It will not go on. Your dynasty will not be established. God hath chosen Himself a man after His own heart, and He will appoint him to be the king over Israel. And Saul continued his mistakes. He was told to go and destroy all of the Amalekites. They were under the ban of God. They were to be totally destroyed as an act of judgment from God, and Saul was to be the tool of God to do that. But when Saul went, he did not do what God said. He spared the king and he spared the best of the animals. And when he came back, he met Samuel. Samuel had already been told by God, he hath not performed my commandments. So when Samuel met Saul, Saul said, blessed be thou of the Lord. I have performed the commandment of the Lord. Samuel said, if you have performed the commandment of the Lord, then what meaneth the bleating of the sheep and the lowing of the oxen which fill my ears? And Saul excused himself, saying, oh, well, we were going to use them to offer sacrifices unto your God. Samuel said, behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken is better than the fat of rams, because rebellion is as witchcraft and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of God, He has rejected you from being king. Before the death of the patriarch Jacob, whose name was changed by God to Israel. He had uttered statements regarding the future of his sons. And as he uttered those statements, he made this comment about Judah. In Genesis 49:10, he said, "The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet until Shiloh come." And that was the tribe of Judah. Saul was of the tribe of Benjamin. But Saul was rejected of God because of his own character. And now God sent Samuel to a city called Bethlehem, Judah, to the house of a man named Jesse. And when Samuel got there, Jesse began to bring his sons out. No, it's not that one. Samuel was thinking, "Oh, surely it'll be this one." No, Samuel. "You're looking on the outside," God said. "I look on the inside. This is not the one." All of the sons of Jesse were brought by, and not a one had been chosen by God. And finally Samuel said to Jesse, "This surely is not all of your sons. There must be another one." And Jesse said, "Well, yes, there's one more. He's just a kid. He's out keeping the sheep." Samuel said, "Bring him in instantly." So Jesse fetched David. David came in before Samuel. And God said to Samuel, "This is the one. Anoint him to be king." And so David was anointed to be the king. But his path would be a long path, a difficult path, before he became that king. He came to the notice of Saul in a big way, and to the notice of Israel in a very big way, the day that he showed up where the army of Israel was encamped at the Valley of Elah. And that's where he slew the giant Goliath. He went out in faith with only the things he had used before to fight the lion, to fight the bear. And he believed in the God of heaven who gave him the victory over these animals. And believing that, he was able to go out against Goliath and he slew him. He became a lieutenant in Saul's army. And everywhere David went, the Lord blessed him, so that whatever he did prospered. He overcame every enemy he fought. There was no challenge too great. And David began to have such a reputation among the Israelites that they would greet him when he came in saying, "Saul hath slain his thousands, but David his 10,000s. And Saul grew so jealous that he determined he would kill this threat to his throne. And he tried to kill David. David had to flee from him. And for some years David fled until finally he moved over into Philistine territory. As the time of Saul's end came, he committed one of his last great transgressions. When he could find nothing out from God, since God had withdrawn his spirit from Saul, Saul went to a necromancer, the witch of Endor, to find out from her what was about to happen. And the witch of Endor told him that you are going to die. The witch of Endor called up Samuel. She was not able to do that, but on this occasion God allowed Samuel, who was now dead, to come back from the dead and to tell Saul what would happen. Samuel said, "Tomorrow you and your sons will be as I." And it was so. The next day there was the great battle fought between the Israelites and the Philistines on Mount Gilboa. And Saul died, and his sons died. David was made king. He was made king first in Hebron. Now, when David became king, he didn't get much of a kingdom. Because during the days of the judges, especially there in the last years of Samuel, the Philistines began their encroachment. And during the life of Saul, the Canaanites and the Philistines and other enemies round about nibbled away at Israelite territory until the kingdom of Saul in Israel was composed only of this central part here in the hill country and also this portion over here on the east side, about 6,000 square miles. That was the size of the kingdom that David took over. And he ruled down here in Hebron for a time, for about 7.5 years. And then he was made the king over the whole country of Israel. And he captured the city of Jerusalem from the Jebusites and made it his capital, the capital of all Israel. David was a glorious king. Everything he did was blessed of God. He defeated all of the enemies round about. He finally put down the Philistines. He put down the Moabites, the Edomites, the Ammonites. He even defeated the Syrians up here to the northeast. David overcame all of his enemies round about. He was indeed a mighty man. And when he had won peace all about him, he said to his friend and prophet Nathan, "It is in my heart to build a house for the Lord." Nathan said, "That's wonderful. Go to it." But then God spoke to Nathan and God said, "Nathan, I have not called upon anyone to build me a house before now. Neither do I call upon David to build me a house now. In fact, I am not going to let David build me a house. But I am going to raise up a son of David, and that son will build me a house. And I am going to establish his throne forever. And I will seat his son upon that throne, and he will rule forever." David was overwhelmed by that promise when Nathan came and told him what God had said. And David went, and he went and he prayed to God. And he said, "Oh Lord, what am I that you have uttered such a statement as this? You've given such a promise to me. And this is not a promise for just a day or two. This is a promise for a long time to come." And David was so grateful to God. Now it was David's thought that this promise was fulfilled in Solomon. In 1 Chronicles chapter 22, David makes that point. It was Solomon's thought that it was in himself that this promise was fulfilled. He stated so in 1 Kings 5 in his communications with Hiram, king of Tyre, when he asked for his help to build the temple. He also stated that same idea when he prayed to God in 2 Chronicles 6 in his prayer of dedication at the dedication of the temple. And even though it was a part of the fulfillment, it was not the complete fulfillment of the promise of God that a descendant of David would sit upon the throne forever and that his kingdom would never end. That was not fulfilled completely in Solomon. It only began to be fulfilled. And by the end of the Old Testament period, there wasn't a son of David sitting upon a throne anywhere. It is only in Jesus Christ that that promise was fulfilled to David. It is only in Jesus Christ that that promise ever could be fulfilled to David. And after the death of David, there was a psalm written by a man called Ethan the Ezrahite. That is Psalm 89. And Ethan the Ezrahite is mentioned as one of the very wise men in the court of Solomon in 1 Kings chapter 4. And this Psalm 89 is ascribed to Ezra, or to Ethan the Ezrahite. The psalm is a rather, it has a rather pessimistic background, making many think that the psalm was written actually after the kingdom had divided. And it is feasible that Ethan the Ezrahite might have lived to see that kingdom divided. But even though the kingdom divided, Ethan the Ezrahite wrote in that 89th psalm that that promise that God made to David in 2 Samuel 7, 1 Chronicles 17, that promise that God made to David there would be fulfilled. Now the thing that makes that so impressive is that that psalm was written after the death of David. It was written after Solomon had ruled. And God was inspiring His prophets and letting His people know that no, this promise regarding a son of David who would rule forever was not fulfilled completely in Solomon. It only began to be fulfilled. And the language of Psalm 89 is that the days of his kingdom will be as the days of the sun and of the moon. But how could a man rule and have a kingdom as the days of the sun and of the moon? The only way would be if some means were found to overcome the problem of dying. How could the problem of death be overcome? David was also referred to as the sweet singer of Israel. 2 Samuel 23 and verse 1. He was the sweet singer of Israel. He was an inspired man, and the Spirit of God spoke by his tongue. And the Spirit of God moved David to write. David wrote approximately half of the Psalms. He was one of the towering figures of the Bible. And he wrote, "Thou wilt not leave my soul in Sheol, neither wilt thou give thy Holy One to see corruption." He prophesied of a resurrection in Psalm 16:10. In the 22nd Psalm, he prophesied of one who would cry out, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" as if he were abandoned of God. He would be surrounded by a company of evildoers. "They pierce my hands and my feet. They part my garments among them, and upon my vesture do they cast lots." All of those thoughts found in the 22nd Psalm. To David is also attributed the writing of the second Psalm, in which God points out that in spite of the opposition of the nations and the heathen, "I will yet set my king upon my holy hill of Zion." Men will not be able to stop God from doing what He set out to do. He did do it. And then David also wrote, "The Lord said unto my Lord, Sit thou on my right hand till I make thine enemies the footstool of thy feet." And in that Psalm, Psalm 110, in verse 1, David was making the point that Jehovah said unto someone who was David's Lord, "The Lord said unto my Lord." How could that be? Who in the world is this? We have Jehovah who is Lord, but there is another Lord. Who is the Lord of David? Who is this? It was in the days of Jesus, when Jesus asked the Jews themselves. He asked them about the Messiah. "Whose son is he?" They said, "David's." If that be the case, then how is it that David calls the Messiah Lord, saying, "The Lord said unto my Lord"? In what way could the Messiah be the Lord of David? The Pharisees did not know. The Jews did not know, because they did not comprehend the deity of the Christ. That's what they didn't get, and that's why they didn't know what Psalm 110 verse 1 means. And also in that same Psalm verse 4, David wrote, "Thou art a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. The Lord hath sworn and will not change His mind. You are a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek." Who could that be? It could not be any man of Levi. It could not be any man of the tribe of Levi, of the priestly family. And yet he will be a priest after the order of Melchizedek. David was the tool of God to write these wonderful things through, pointing to the future, looking for that one who is coming, that one who was foretold there in the Garden of Eden, the son of woman, the seed of woman, bruising the head of Satan. He is the one that Abraham was told, "Through your seed all families of the earth will be blessed." And that promise was repeated to Isaac and to Jacob. And that promise is still going on. And in the days of David, we realize that it would be through David that that son would come. It would be through David and through his line that that son would come. That son that we're looking for. And so David was indeed a man of God and a great man. And when he died, he ruled over a kingdom of 60,000 square miles instead of 6,000. The kingdom was 10 times bigger when David died and handed it over to his son Solomon. Here had been the part that belonged to Saul. Just that part right in there. But David and Solomon ruled over all of this territory, and Solomon controlled even this area as far as the Euphrates River. A tremendous empire in that day, in that part of the country. When Solomon took over from his father David, he was given every advantage and had every advantage that anyone ever had when he took over a kingdom. There was no lack of money. There were just heaps and piles of money. He was rich. Peace all around. And Solomon, when he had completed the subduing of his enemies, went to Gibeon and prayed to God. And when he prayed to God, he said, "Oh God, I don't know how to rule this people. I don't know how to conduct myself. What I request from you is wisdom." And God said, "Solomon, because you have not requested riches and long life and things like that, but you have requested wisdom, this pleases me very much, and I will give you wisdom. And I will also give you these other blessings as well." So He did give Solomon wisdom. Wisdom above that of any other man known. He was wiser than the wise of his day. And he rose up and he carried out the plan of David to build that house for God. And he built the temple with the help of Hiram of Tyre. A splendid building there built in Jerusalem. The temple of God. Where Israel would now gather together and worship and offer their sacrifices. Jerusalem was now their headquarters. Chosen of God that He would put His name there. And Solomon ruled over this great empire. And as the years went by, Solomon was very wealthy. And he was very wise. And he used his wisdom to write about birds and trees and things of nature. He also collected and wrote songs and proverbs. But out of all of the 1,000-plus songs he wrote, we have one. Why not the others? Because the fact is that Solomon used his great wisdom for everything in the world except for what he had asked it for. He had asked it that he might know how to conduct himself and how to rule Israel. But he conducted himself more foolishly than perhaps any other king did. Certainly one with as many advantages that he had to throw away. And he really made a mess of the kingdom. Solomon married women from every nation all around that part of the world. 700 wives. And most of these wives came from idolatrous backgrounds. And these wives turned his heart away from God. And he began to build temples for these wives to worship their gods. Chemosh of Molech. Moab. Molech of Ammon. He began to worship the Ashtaroth. This Solomon, the son of David. And he led the people into idolatry. What they saw their wonderful, glorious king doing, it was very easy for them to do as well. And so Solomon left the Lord. He forsook Him and did not serve God perfectly as David had. In other words, David served God to the day of his death. And so before Solomon's death, God had already announced the doom of the United Kingdom. God said, I am not going to do this until Solomon is dead. Now get this, people. God said, I am not going to remove the kingdom from Solomon's house until his death because of David, his father. Even though David was dead now, God still had regard for David to the point that he would not divide the kingdom and take part of it away until Solomon, the son of David, was dead. But when Solomon died, the huge, deep cracks that were already in the nation of Israel completely broke the country apart into the north and the south. And that begins the period known as the divided kingdom. The united kingdom lasted a period of 120 years. It was a time of adventure. It was a time of weakness. It was a time of strength. It was a time of unbelief. And it was a time of faith. It was a time of transgression. And it was a time of obedience. Like most times, you usually find those things mingled together. But these were the three great kings that ruled over Israel, the United Kingdom: Saul, David, and Solomon. In many ways, the study of these three men is a study of character. There was Saul. Saul's attitude was, I am not going to go out of my way at all to obey God. If it is convenient and it is on my way, I will do what he says. If it is not, then I don't care a thing about what God wants me to do. That was Saul's attitude. Compare your attitude to that one. What is my attitude toward God? Is mine a Saul attitude? Or is it that of David? Lord, I want to know what you want me to do. I don't want to do anything without your approval, without your authority. David was a man after God's own heart. Is my attitude a David attitude? And then there was Solomon, who had every advantage that could be given to a man handed to him on a silver platter. And he managed to throw away and trample in the dirt every blessing that his father David had prepared for him to use and to have, and every blessing that Jehovah God gave him as well. So this morning, as we remind you of the invitation of Jesus Christ, you know, you will manifest one character or the other. Which will it be? If we can persuade you to obey the gospel today and meet the conditions of salvation, we hope you will do that very thing. We encourage you to do that as we stand and sing.